The following is a seminar entitled Pure Devotional Service, Part 3, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on May 30th, 2010, in Lenasia, South Africa.
So, first of all, we beg the blessings of the previous acharyas. So we begin this third session of Pure Devotional Service. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Barakamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sagana Raghunathan Vita Sajiva Sadaitam Zavadutam Vrijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha. So, this is a very wonderful opportunity to focus on the actual essence of existence itself. That we exist is self-evident by our perception of existence. Each one of us perceives that we exist as an individual. So, what is the perfection of that existence? What is the nature of that existence? This is the subject matter of this seminar. In other words, how to be who you are purely. How to actually execute the function for which you're naturally meant to function. Just as a fish in the water is very happily situated, that same creature is on the land, he will be in a very difficult position. So the living entity, by his or her very nature, is meant to be in a loving relationship with that Supreme Person who is the source of all existence. As we discussed in detail yesterday, we exist by dint of the fact that that Supreme Person is manifesting us for the purpose of having loving rasa or loving relationship with us. That's the very reason of our existence. So, to try to do anything besides having a loving relationship with that Supreme Person, Krishna, who is the source of all existence, means you're dysfunctional, actually. You become dysfunctional. So, it's not surprising when we have a world around us which is completely chaos. Bedlam. It's a madhouse. Everyone is dysfunctional here. It's not surprising, is it? It would be expected that when if you have the whole community of fish on the beach instead of in the water, they're not going to function properly. That community of fish will not function as they would naturally in the water. So, by the mercy of the pure devotee, that poor suffering fish was flapping in agony on the beach. That poor suffering fish can be put back into the water and actually experience his natural consciousness. As we described yesterday, Brahmate Kona Bhagavanji, Brahmande, let's see, what is it? Brahmande, while wandering throughout this universe, from the highest planet to the lowest planet, that living entity who is very fortunate, he comes in contact with a bona fide spiritual master. And by the combined mercy of Guru and Krishna, he receives the seed of bhakti, Bhakti Lata Beach. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavanji Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. So we have been blessed with that seed of bhakti by His Divine Grace, Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Pariva Jagacharjam Asta Tarasadashi Shimab A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, who is present with us here today. One may say, but that's a murti of Prabhupada, that's not Prabhupada. But I have evidence to the contrary. That is actually Srila Prabhupada. We had one festival in Atlanta, Georgia several years ago. It's an annual festival, the Pandihati Festival, Chipped Rice and Yogurt Festival. During when Prabhupada was on this planet, that temple was named New Pandihati Dham. Those of you who have read the Chaitanya Charitamrita know there is a pastime, the Chipped Rice and Yogurt Festival. It's a very enlivening, happy festival where all the Brahmins were stuffed with chipped rice and yogurt. And this temple was named after that place in India where that festival took place as New Pandihati Dham. So every year they have a huge festival there, chipped rice and yogurt. They have huge pots. They auction them off, actually. People pay $1,000 for a pot, a big pot of chipped rice and yogurt. Each one is, Jai Bhataka Maharaj goes there. I don't know if he's going now after the stroke, but he was always there every year. He may still be going. He's a pretty courageous pioneer, preaching pioneer. Every pot is decorated in a unique way. It's a very beautiful thing. But anyway, during this festival, the big noon arti kirtan, we could distinctly see everyone who went to look. You could see that Prabhupada was crying. The murti was crying. There was a tear coming from his right eye, just right down his cheek like that. So you can't tell me it's just a murti. Wherever Prabhupada is being, whether Prabhupada's murti is being worshipped with love, Prabhupada becomes personally present in that murti. And by serving that murti, you're directly serving Srila Prabhupada. And you can always ask some boon also. When you render service, you can always ask a boon also. That, my dear Srila Prabhupada, please bless me with Krishna Prem, you see. So in this way, Prabhupada is here blessing us today with His auspicious divine presence. And we are begging that He can bless us all with Krishna Prem today. We can not only academically study pure devotional service, but we can actually, it will awaken within our hearts. That is my prayer to Prabhupada today, that all of us can have pure devotional service awaken within our hearts. So, yesterday we studied the first characteristic, which is pure devotional service brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. And we have five more characteristics. We can discuss these today along with other subject matters related to pure devotional service. The second characteristic of pure devotional service is that it's the beginning of all auspiciousness. So, what is that all auspiciousness? The entire world now is in a very inauspicious condition. It just seems to be becoming more and more inauspicious all the time. Just like there's a huge oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, and they haven't stopped it yet, and it's still spewing out oil. Their final thing that was supposed to finish it, which was the ultimate thing, didn't work. And it's still, some are saying it will pollute the entire oceanic system of the whole planet. Then the whole planet will be messed up by this oil spill. So there's just one inauspicious thing after another inauspicious thing happening on this planet. That's a fact. So how can we counteract all the inauspicity or inauspiciousness, which is becoming more and more predominant in this age of Kali? How will we counteract it? That is the process known as pure devotional service. Pure devotional service. Anyone who engages in pure devotional service, he or she is has a neutralizing effect by their mere presence on this planet, by their mere thinking even, by their speaking and by their actions. They are having a neutralizing effect on the inauspicious conditions of the Kali Yuga. So, not only is it beneficial for oneself to engage in pure devotional service, but by doing so, one renders the highest welfare work to all the suffering living entities. So, this is the mood of the Vaishnava. Someone can say, why should I worry about it? You can't really, you know, Hindus don't try to spread Hinduism. I mean, what is this anyway? But no, this is not Hinduism. This is Vedic culture, actually. Vedic culture is very keen that everyone should become blessed. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, he has given that very nice verse in the fifth canto, 18th chapter, 9th verse of the Bhagavatam. Svastiyastu vishvasya kalav prasidatam dayantabhutani shivam matodaya manashtabhadram bhajatam madoksaje aveshitam no materatya haitaki. Prahlad is praying, may there be good fortune for all living entities throughout the entire universe. May all the envious persons be pacified. Let all living entities become peaceful by engaging in bhakti yoga. For by engaging in devotional service, they will always think of each other's welfare. Therefore, Prahlad says, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence, Lord Sri Krishna, and always remain absorbed in thoughts of Him. So this is the mood of a Vaishnava, you see. The Vaishnava is not happy to simply be happy himself. He does not become content simply by his own Krishna consciousness. Actually, he becomes very discontented to see the suffering of the material planet. This material planet. This reminds me, one time I was leaving India, you know. In India, they still have the old low-tech thing. They frisk everybody, you know, when you leave India. So we were leaving from Delhi, and the guard there, you could see he was from a Vaishnava family. He was very happy to see you. You know, I had my dhoti, tilak, the whole nine yards, you know. And he was pretty happy to see. I don't follow. I can't hear you.
Feedback.
There's feedback? Okay, that tell the sound engineer. Not me. So anyway, he was very happy to see that somebody was practicing Vaishnava culture. He was very, very happy to see. So he said, how long have you been doing it? I said, well, almost 40 years. He had a huge smile on his face. And then he got even a bigger smile on his face, and he said, how does it feel? How do you feel? And I looked around at the airport all around me, all these karmis, engaged in all this sinful activity, and I said, I feel miserable. And he was shocked. Miserable? Then I explained, yes, because it pains me so much to see all these people who are not Krishna conscious. And then his smile got even bigger. Because actually this is the more we become Krishna conscious, the more we become sensitive to the suffering that's going on all around us. You may say that sensitivity to the pain and suffering, well, that's not a very happy thing, but no. The more you can feel pain and suffering, to see the suffering of other living beings, actually the more Krishna becomes pleased with you. And Prabhupada does explain this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He says that the devotee who takes up this mission of delivering the fallen conditioned souls from their suffering, he is shouldering the burden of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya is in great anxiety to see the living entities who are suffering, lacking Krishna consciousness. So any devotee who takes up this mood of preaching, pushing forward Krishna consciousness to save the fallen conditioned souls, he is actually relieving Lord Chaitanya of some of his burden. And Lord Chaitanya, you can just imagine, if you relieve Lord Chaitanya of some of his burden, how much mercy he's going to give you. So the more you're willing to feel suffering in your heart to see the suffering of others, the more you become ecstatic, actually. It's transcendental. And I know I had an experience with Prabhupada in this regard as well. We had a little tiny preaching center there in Austin, Texas. And that's where I joined. It's back in 71. So my initiation letter, Prabhupada said, make our Austin center a grand success. The order of the spiritual master, that's your life and soul, right? So I became very dedicated. We have to make this Austin Center a grand success. This is a direct order from Prabhupada. And then the temple president said, well, I think we're going to close the temple and just go traveling and preaching. And I was thinking, what? Prabhupada ordered me to... This doesn't work. It won't. How I can serve Prabhupada's order if we close the temple, So I wrote Prabhupada a letter. I said, Prabhupada, temple president says he wants to close the temple, but I don't think we should close this temple, Prabhupada. I said, these people in Austin, they're in a suffering condition, lacking Krishna consciousness. We have to stay here and save them. I wrote to him like that. And a letter came back. It was a dual letter on one aerogram to me and to the temple president. Well, the temple president wasn't very happy with me. Because Prabhupada wasn't very happy with him, and he told him so. And Prabhupada was very happy with me, and he told me so. The temple president, who would get the letter? The temple president let me have the letter. But Prabhupada was very pleased. He says, I'm very pleased that you want to stay there because the people are suffering and lacking in Krishna consciousness. So I could see that this is a way to please the spiritual master. This is a way to please Srila Prabhupada. If you have this desire to save the suffering souls who are rotting in the cycle of birth and death, you see, there's nothing that pleases more, you see. Sometimes my disciples will ask me, well, how can I please you, Gurudev? And I just tell them, become a pure devotee and dedicate yourself to saving the fallen souls of this planet. It's a simple thing. What's personal service I can do for you, Guru Maharaj? And I just tell them. You become a pure devotee and you dedicate your life to saving all the fallen conditioned souls. So that's the very best service we can do from our spiritual master. You see, the spiritual master embraces the mission of delivering not only his disciples, but the entire suffering humanity. So that disciple who preaches, who tries to save the fallen, suffering souls, you see, he is doing the best service for his spiritual master. So this topic of, you know, the beginning of all auspiciousness is a very, very deep topic. What does that mean? The pure devotional service is the beginning of all auspiciousness. You may say, well, how could it have such an effect on the planet? I mean, you know, is it, you don't have any weapons, you don't have any nuclear bombs, I mean, you don't have any, it's not based on financial clout or military clout, or I mean, how could it really be that potent? I mean, you say, how could it be so, have a potent effect on the planet to practice pure devotional service? The Prabhupada confirms this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. This quote amazes me. I mean, it never see. Every time I remember this quote, I'm just completely awed what Prabhupada has said. Here's what Prabhupada said. He said that a devotee of the Lord who will chant the holy names of the Lord without any offense, you see, that means completely free of namaparaj, shuddhanam, pure name, you see. A devotee who chants the holy names without offense becomes Jagat Guru. And under his influence, the entire world will take up Krishna consciousness. So that means even if one of us can become a pure chanter of the holy name, this movement will save the whole world very quickly. Of course, Prabhupada was such a pure devotee. He could have done it himself. But he left us some work to do. Actually, I was one time asked of Srila Prabhupada that Vishnu Janaswami had heard that Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, I have left this planet with my work unfinished. And he was wondering, how is that possible that Bhaktivinoda could have unfinished work? And Prabhupada said, that is his kindness, that he is leaving something for us to accomplish. So anyway, this is the great power of pure devotional service, that even if one person becomes a pure devotee, that one devotee can save the entire universe. So our process of Krishna consciousness in the line of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not only revolutionizing our own hearts, but our program, our agenda is to revolutionize the entire universe. So, the more you revolutionize your own heart by pure devotional service, the more you will have an uplifting impact on the entire universe. So it's pretty exciting, actually. You get to have a cutting-edge life, you see. Spiritual revolutionary life, you see. It doesn't matter if you're a Brahmin. You say, well, the Brahmacharis, yeah, but I'm a householder, I got my ordinary duties, I got a work of job. No. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was not revolutionary Vaishnava. He was most revolutionary. So whether you're a student, whether you're working, whether you're maintaining a family, whatever you're doing, it doesn't matter. If even Arjuna didn't go out to do preaching work or book distribution, he just did his ordinary occupational duties. And by that, he had a very powerful impact on the planet. So, if you will, under the guidance of your spiritual master and your temple authorities, you will simply engage in this pure devotional service process and serve this mission of Srila Prabhupada, then this will be to have the most auspicious impact not only on your own consciousness, but on the entire city of Lanesia, Johannesburg, South Africa. Africa just expanded out to the whole universe. So we say it's the beginning of all auspiciousness. We really mean it. It's not just some fancy words. This is tangible. It's real. you can actually do something to change the world, you see, just by chanting good japa. You got a spiritual revolution right there in your bead bag. Want to revolutionize the planet? Well, pick up that bead bag and chant some good rounds. You will have an impact on the entire universe just by chanting good japa. And then if you go out and you tell other people, you distribute books, or you do Harinam, then it becomes magnified 1,000 times more, you see. So, this is pretty auspicious stuff here, this Krishna consciousness. There's nothing like it. There's nothing else that is all auspicious, really. There's nothing else that is all auspicious. All auspicious means beneficial for every single living entity throughout the whole existence. That's called auspicious, you see. All auspicious. So now we'll look at the third one. Third characteristic. Pure devotional service automatically puts one in transcendental pleasure. Well, I think that's something we could all relate to. How does that work anyway? What's the methodology? What's the science behind it? How does it work? Well, I'll go back to the fish example. That fish is in a horrible state of consciousness. They're flapping in agony on the beach. And his death is coming very soon because he's disconnected from his natural environment. But you throw him in the water immediately, he gets all of his energy back. He becomes fully alive and he's swimming here, swimming there in complete bliss, you see. Relatively speaking, of course, this is a gross example. But the point is, because pure devotional service reconnects us with our original nature, which is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. As soon as you get reconnected to devotional service, all of your miseries go away. They just naturally disappear instantly. They're gone. They're finished. Like as soon as you flip that switch, on the light switch, all the darkness is immediately dissipated. So pure devotional service immediately puts one in transcendental bliss. Not only does it put one in transcendental bliss, but it puts one in the highest type of transcendental bliss. There, the Brahman realization is also considered transcendental bliss, but the caliber of bliss is not the same. This bliss is much better. The bliss of pure devotional service is described in the Bhagavatam Purport. This bliss of bhakti is nirvana vilambitani. Nirvana describes the bliss of the Buddhists and the impersonal, you see. Nirvana means giving up the repetition of birth and death. But vilambitani means which minimizes. So this bliss of Krishna consciousness, you see, it minimizes even the bliss of Brahmanda, emerging into the Brahman effulgence. It makes, in fact, the bliss of bhakti, pure bhakti, when you compare the bliss of Brahmanda, the Brahmanda bliss is just like poison. So you can imagine if the bliss of pure bhakti makes the bliss of Brahmanda as poison, then what would it compare with the bliss of so-called bliss of sense enjoyment? That's it. There's a nice verse in this connection about the bliss of sense enjoyment. Yan maitanadi griyamedi sukham hitucham. That pleasure, which is number one pleasure for the materialistic people. What is that pleasure? Sex. Maitu. That pleasure, Bhagavatam says, hitucham. It is indeed insignificant. So once one gets this actual pleasure of Krishna consciousness, then any pleasure of this material world, even the greatest of all pleasures, sex pleasure, is just the tucham, 10th class pleasure. This is nicely explained by Yadavacharya. What is it? Jamunacharya, that's right. Yadavati mamacheta krishna pada vinde naganavarasada manunyataram jumasit Dadavati vatanari sangame smaryamane bhavati mukushushtu nishtivanam cha. He says that ever since I've been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Sri Shivada and Krishna, deriving ever increasing pleasure in that service. What is the Sanskrit? Nava, nava rasa, newer and newer taste at every minute, you see. Nava is new, newer, and rasa is taste. Nava, nava rasa. Getting nava, nava rasa. In that bhakti, in that pure devotional activities, you see. If the thought of sex pleasure enters into my brain, what do? Do I get all excited? No. My lips curl with this taste and I spit at the thought. You see. So this artificial spitting? No, this is genuine spitting. Because he is tasting a pleasure which is millions and billions of times greater. Someone who is accustomed to eating stool, they may think it is very nice food. You see. But you give them some higher taste, and they will reject that stool eating business. So, once one actually tastes what is Krishna consciousness, they will no longer be interested in sense gratification. You may say, but Prabhu, we see so many people came to this movement, Hare Krishna movement, they follow our principles for some time and then they went back to sense gratification. So how is this really true? How could you say this is true? But no, if you really get a taste for pure bhakti, you won't ever go back. That means they never really got the taste. Because once you get that taste of pure bhakti, you're never going to go back. You'll never go back. There's no taste like pure devotional service. Once you get even a little tiny sample drop of it in your mouth or in your, I'm speaking figuratively here. Once you get a drop of it within your consciousness, you see, you will never dream of going back to sense enjoyment ever again. So, how to get that drop, at least a little tiny, teeny, meeny little drop? How can I get that little teeny, meeny drop of pure bhakti? That's described. You have to get the dust from the lotus feet of the pure devotees. That is described. But what if the pure devotees are not physically present? How will I get their dust? That dust is also manifested in the form of their instructions. So we will take these teachings coming to us from the great acharyas, Mahajano Yena Gutta Supanta. And we will take these teachings coming to us from the great acharyas and embrace these teachings, taking them into our hearts. Embracing them tightly within our hearts is our very life and soul, you see. In this way, we will get that dust, that magic foot dust of the pure devotees, and we'll become transformed from suffering souls of this material world into transcendentalists, devotees of the Lord. We will become transformed, and then gradually, we will go through the stages. Will become completely pure devotees. And we will be able to see Krishna face to face. That day will come. As Prabhupada told me, he said, now you just qualify yourself to see Krishna face to face. I love that instruction. Prabhupada personally told me, now you just qualify yourself to see Krishna face to face. So I know by Prabhupada's mercy it's possible to do that. Certainly on my own, I know I'm the most disqualified, contemptible rascal. It would certainly not be possible for me ever to see Krishna. But by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, those who are sleeping, kindly wake up. This is important. If you're too tired, go take rest. But if you're here, you might as well hear. Try to hear, don't sleep. So, sometimes it is difficult for us because to engage in emotional service, that's a fact. We all have difficulties engaging in emotional service. We're not blaming anyone because we're all in the same boat. We all have difficulties sometimes because the various modes are pulling on us. The mode of ignorance is pulling on us. The mode of passion is pulling on us. Even the mode of goodness can be a distraction sometimes. So we have to encourage each other. This is why we have our Sangha, Krishna Consciousness Movement, ISKCON, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Because, as it is stated, that one stick you can easily break, but a bundle of sticks you cannot break. So by us coming together as a spiritual family, you see, then we get synergy. This is a popular buzzword in the modern day corporate world nowadays, synergy, you see. Synergy means, well, 1 + 1 = 2 is the normal thing. But the principle of synergy, 1 + 1 = 10, you see. If I combine my energy with your energy, then out of that combination we get even more energy than your energy added to my energy. It's like a geometric effect instead of just an arithmetic effect. So this ISKCON is a synergetic movement, you see. Synergetic movement. That we get by plugging into ISKCON, plugging into this Sangha that Prabhupada has created, we are directly connecting with Prabhupada. You see, Prabhupada said, I am ISKCON. ISKCON is my body. So by connecting with this society that Prabhupada created, we're immediately connected with Prabhupada, even if we haven't met him. I had this experience, you know, physically, you know what I mean? Of course, we have met him. Anybody who dedicates himself to his movement, Prabhupada has entered their heart. He's taken up residence within their heart. Anyone who's dedicated himself to this movement, Prabhupada has entered in their heart. Is a permanent resident. So I remember the great potency of Srila Prabhupada, even without having seen him, just by hearing about him. I remember Vishnujana Swami had come to Austin to open a center there, and he was the only one who ever had met Prabhupada. None of us had ever seen Prabhupada before. But he would tell us all about Prabhupada. You know, we'd have the books, and he would tell us stories about even with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said this, and Prabhupada did that. And it was really wonderful, you know, to see the faith and the joy that he experienced, you see, by being a follower of Prabhupada and remembering Prabhupada. And I was just coming around at the time, checking out the scene, because, you know, I'd been praying to God to guide me how to become a perfect servant. I had actually been praying for pure bhakti, but I didn't know how to really practically manifest it. So then Vishnu Janmara shows up on the scene. It was actually Krishna's answer to my prayer. But anyway, I remember one lady who was coming to the program. She had a little tiny baby girl. And this baby girl had never seen Prabhupada either, obviously. None of us have. But this little baby girl was hearing about Prabhupada. And this little baby girl, whenever she would hear the name Prabhupada, she would get so excited, she would go, Prabhupada! And it would just like go right, it would just melt your heart to hear this little baby saying the name of Prabhupada. You know, little baby girl, how much love she had for Prabhupada, even she, just by hearing about it. Prabhupada was, you know, like, you know, a little child, you know, they think Santa Claus is the best thing. You know, this is like 10 billion times more potent than Santa Claus, you know. Prabhupada. So, it was just amazing, you know. And none of us had met Prabhupada. Vishnu Tamara was just sharing with us his experience of Prabhupada, and we were all becoming conscious of Prabhupada, even a little tiny girl. And actually, that little girl inspired me to surrender. I don't know if she ever became a devotee, but her mother became a devotee. But I don't know if that ever happened, but I know that that was part of what inspired me to become a disciple of Prabhupada, just being the little baby girl saying the name Prabhupada. And with such feeling, you see. So, yeah, Prabhupada is present, you see. Not only Srila Prabhupada, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Bhakti Vinod Thakur. I mean, not only the 32 or 33 acharyas there in the list, but millions and millions of pure devotees are present, blessing us in this Krishna consciousness movement. There, how many well wishes does Prabhupada have of his movement? You see, all the followers in the Chaitanya Lila, they're all blessing Prabhupada and his followers. But to speak of all of the Brijavasis, if you can just imagine how many blessings are flowing down upon those persons who are reading Prabhupada's books and trying to seriously follow what's in Prabhupada's books. It's just inconceivable the blessings that are flowing down upon the heads of those men and women, boys and girls, who are taking up this movement that Prabhupada's establishes. So when we say it puts one in transcendental bliss, it's not just some flowery language. It's a fact. You say, well, Prabhu, I'm practicing it, but I don't feel really that blissful all the time. How's that? I don't have the taste. What am I doing wrong? Well, we discussed this yesterday a little bit. Here's the insider secret how to get taste, how to always get the taste at every minute. Would you be interested to hear? Instead of trying to get taste, which is a way of trying to be the enjoyer, of course one is the enjoyer naturally when you become purely fixed in bhakti, but you have to know how to be the enjoyer. What is the technique for being the enjoyer? Instead of trying to get taste, you see, for yourself, try to give taste. That's the key. Try to chant your rounds in such a way that Krishna will relish. Wow! You see? Wow, he's really chanting good rounds today. Krishna has a big smile to hear that japa, you know. In this way, try to give taste. In every aspect of your devotional service, your thoughts, your words, your deeds, in all times, all places, and all circumstances, you see. Try to do your bhakti in such a way that if Prabhupada was watching you right now, he would have a big ear-to-ear grin to see how you're serving, you see. That's the key, you see. Try to give pleasure to your spiritual master. Try to give pleasure to Srila Prabhupada. Try to give pleasure to Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna and Radharani. By this mood of trying to give pleasure, you see, what is the old saying? It's better to give than to receive. So if you're in the mood of giving happiness, dispensing it, giving it, then you will get it. You'll automatically get it. It'll come automatically. So this is the insider secret. Don't try to get taste, try to give taste by your chanting, by your service. Try to give taste to Krishna, Guru, this way. And then you will get unlimited taste. Because, as we always say, when you water the root, all the leaves and branches are nourished. If I'm just trying to get taste out of my service, it means I'm trying to water my own little leaf. I'm trying to pour all the water on myself. You see? I'm trying to water the leaf instead of watering the root. And that doesn't work. You got to water the root. Try to give pleasure to Krishna by the way you chant, by the way you do your service, by everything about your life. Try to, even the way you arrange your house, I mean everything. Try to give pleasure to Krishna in everything you do. Even in your work, try to give pleasure to Krishna. I know I had an interesting experience in that connection. I used to, sometime I was a working man in the working world. Of course, I was a brahmachari for 14 years, but then the Krishna arranged a nice marriage for me. And then I had to go out to the, you know, work a job, as they say. So anyway, I was, I actually, for some time I was doing telesales. I was an award-winning salesman for a big corporation in the U.S. But anyway, I went to the, of course, I went in to get hired. I didn't wear my tilak, and I thought they might not hire me if I wear tilak to apply for the job. But you know, my nature is to wear tilak. I always feel like I'm a Naga Baba if I don't have my tilak on. So one day I said, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to wear tilak to work today and fend on fish. So anyway, I sold like crazy that day. I mean, I was really fired up, you know. And my boss, he was like, wow. He saw my result. He said, I don't know what that is on your forehead. He said, but you must wear it every day. So in this way, you see, even in your work, your ordinary job, you know, it's amazing what you can do if you try to be Krishna conscious at work, you know. It's amazing. Here I was pleasing my karmic boss, you know, by wearing tilak. Oh, you wear tilak every day. So, in this way, if we try to always please Krishna in everything that we do, it's just, it's amazing what will happen, you know. It's amazing the miracles that will happen all around us if we just always try to please Krishna. We have to have faith that it works, you see. There's this, we have to admit it. I mean, there's this part of us, a skeptical, selfish nature we all have. And you may say, but come on, I really have faith. But you know what Prabhupada told us in Los Angeles? He said, Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill and you were thinking, maybe. But Prabhupada nailed us right then. You know, he nailed us. Yes, you, even though we were his initiated disciples, he said, and you were thinking, maybe. So they had that little, that skeptical nature sitting there in our hearts, and it's a fun, you know, maybe. So, you see, we have to overcome that skeptical nature that's sitting inside of us. We have the divine and the demonic natures both sitting in the heart. So we have to have faith in this process. There's an interesting example in this connection. There was an old folk song back in the, I think it was the late 50s in the U.S. It's very popular, on the top 40, it was a popular folk song. It was called, let's see, The Ballad of Desert Pete. So anyway, the idea was that there was this person, he was going across the desert, he was almost finished. He was almost dead from the lack of water, and he was practically, you know, his life was coming to an end. He needed desperately water, but he came upon a well, and on the well there was a glass of water with a note on the glass of water. It said, don't drink this water, but use it to prime the pump. If you prime the pump, you get unlimited water, but if you drink the water, then that's it, you won't get any more. So, in the song went, let's see, you've got to prime the pump. You must have faith and believe. You must give of yourself before you're worthy to receive. So anyway, in the song, the person, he put his faith in old Desert Pete, and he dumped the water down the well, and he pumped it, and he got unlimited. He filled all his canteens up, and he made it all the way across the desert because he put his faith in Desert Pete. So in the same way, you see, we have to understand that if you really want to receive, you have to give first. If you want to taste the nectar of Krishna consciousness, if you want to taste the bliss, you have to give pleasure to Krishna. You have to give pleasure to Srila Prabhupada. You have to give pleasure to your spiritual master. You have to give pleasure to the devotees. That's how you're going to taste it. And if you think you're just going to get it on your own, what is your category according to Shastra? I will just get it on my own. Then that is called Kanishka Adhikari, materialistic devotee, who just cares about himself and nobody else. You see. That person doesn't get that much nectar. The Kanishka Bhakta doesn't get much nectar. I know we had at our temple in Houston, I was serving there many years ago as a brahmachari. But I remember we had every Monday morning, one gentleman who had a jewelry shop in a very, very high-class mall where all the rich people were shopping. He would come every Monday morning when the morning program was over and we were all gone to the Vishadam room. He had a time right. So he wouldn't have to associate with any devotees at all. He would just come in for his darshan on Monday morning to beg the Lord for a profitable week in his business, you see. And he didn't want to talk to any devotees. I even tried to... I was doing the life membership preaching, and I had a whole thing where I would book a program every night. I would go out 6 nights a week and do life membership preaching in the evening, home program 6 nights a week. And then once a week I'd be at the temple to see all the people I was cultivating and to get more appointments for the following week. It was a pretty ecstatic program, actually. But he had no interest to participate in any of our activities. He just wanted to come and see the deity only. He didn't want to see any devotees, didn't want any devotee association, just the deity only, you see. So that's a classic Kanishka. He may have gotten the money he prayed for, but did he get actual transcendental happiness? No, you see. What good is money if you don't have bhakti, you see? Money without bhakti is dirty, you see. It's just dirty. Money used in Krishna's service, that's nectar. It's nectarian if you can make money or collect money and use it for Krishna. That's nectar. But just to try to make money for yourself and spend it for yourself and the extensions of yourself, your family members, it's a very dirty feeling. It doesn't really satisfy the heart. So in this way, we have to understand the method by which we can actually taste the transcendental bliss. There's a really good advice given in the Bhagavatam for those of us who are struggling, and that's, I think it applies to all of us, for those who are struggling to get that taste, you see. The Bhagavatam gives a very nice insider secret of how to get that taste. Shushu shro shudadana sha vasadeva kataruchi sammahat sevyarapa punya sevana kirtana. By serving those devotees who are completely free from all vice, Bhagavatam says, great service is done because by such service one develops an affinity or a taste for hearing the Bhagavad Kata, the Vasudeva Kata, Vasudeva Kata Ruchi. So that's the easy formula. How to actually taste this transcendental bliss. We have to serve those devotees who are free from all vice, who have no ulterior motive for engaging in devotional service, who are simply doing it to please Krishna and to deliver the fallen souls of this planet. If we can serve such Vaishnavas, you see, then we will develop a very, very strong taste in this Krishna Katha. Krishna Katha is actually so relishable that once you develop a taste for it, you can just, I mean, how much nectar you can get from it. Just look at the Bhagavatam. You have Parikshit Maharaj sitting there for 7 days. Now we're having, I was thinking, well, I mean, my goodness, I gotta go 2-4 hours, 8 hours of just non-stop talking. I mean, how can I possibly... Sometimes I think, well, how is it possible I could talk for 8 hours about pure devotional service and keep everybody interested? I just think, well, it's only by the mercy of Prabhupada I could do such a thing. I mean, 8 hours? just sitting here and talking to an audience for 8 hours? It seems inconceivable, but actually 8 hours is nothing. How many hours are there in 7 days? Well, there's 24 times 7, so it'd be 140 plus 28, right? 168 hours, isn't it? 7 days, 168 hours. So this 8 hours of talking about pure devotional service is nothing. Shukadeva was talking about it for 168 hours. And I guarantee you, nobody was falling asleep. Parikshit Maharaj didn't even get up to take he didn't take a prasadam break, he didn't take a sleeping break, he didn't get up to take a drink of water, he didn't even go to use the toilet or whatever, the nature, go out in the woods if they had no day. He didn't even take a urine break, pass urine. I mean, it was just completely absorbed, transcendentally situated beyond the body. So this is the potency of Vasudeva Katha, Krishna Katha, you see. If you actually dive deeply into it, you completely transcend your material body. You enter into the transcendental dimension beyond time and space. So it's actually pretty potent. And that's one secret of how it's easy to go on for 8 hours, because once you become situated beyond time, then it doesn't seem like you're really spending any time at all. The 8 hours is like that. Otherwise, just imagine I remember my Christian preacher when I was a boy, Reverend Joe Owen. He's a nice man, but he was our minister of our Christian church, Reverend Joe Owen. So I remember I would sometimes visit him in the pastor's study, where he had a huge library of books, and he had his pipe. He would smoke his pipe while he was studying all the books, and he had a big legal pad. He would struggle the whole week to write a 20-minute sermon. The whole week he would just struggle, you know, looking up a quote from this book, a quote from that book. It was like very, very difficult work for him. And he would stand up, and they had a pulpit. He'd stand way up high in the air, about this big, you had to walk up a stairway, and he would be way up there looking down on the congregation, and this way up and high up in the air, a pulpit they call it. And it was the most boring lecture, you call it a sermon. It was really dull. It was boring. He had no life. There was no enthusiasm. He was just reading off this legal pad that he had struggled all week. It was a struggle for him to write it. It was a struggle for us to hear it also. But in Krishna consciousness, you see, it's completely different. Because, I don't even have any outline. All I have is these 6 points. And this subject matter is so powerful, it's so potent, that you can take any one point and just elaborate on it unlimitedly, and then within that elaboration, you can elaborate on another point, and within that elaboration, you can elaborate on another point. And this way, you could go on for millions of years giving a discourse on pure devotional service. So really, 8 hours is nothing. It's just like that. So this is the amazing nature of Krishna consciousness. Machchita madgita prana bodhayanda parasparam katayam tashtamam nityam tashyanti cha ramanti cha. Ramanti? You know the meaning of ramanti? They enjoy. So, if you really want to enjoy, see, this is real enjoyment. Now, sometimes I hear there's a very popular sport here in South Africa, soccer. Now the World Cup is going on, it's a big thing. I understand some of our own boys, they really like to play the soccer. They get taste. Oh yeah, we really enjoy soccer. So, how much enjoyment is there in soccer compared to the enjoyment of Krishna Gita? Well, Krishna Gita is almost as good as soccer. Is that the way it is? Well, we chant Hari Bol and we play soccer. Actually, it is natural. Ball games are, they're exciting, let's face it. There's an excitement in the ball game. Who will control the ball? Is it our team or their team? Who's going to control the ball better? Is it? So, if you like to play ball game, why not play the highest level ball game that has the most excitement and the most nectar? That's my argument. You see, why not play the highest level ball game? See, because you can play a ball game and after it's over, well, you know, it goes on some score sheet. We won, our team won today, and you know, but in the ultimate issue, what have you really accomplished? You see, that your team went to the semifinals and won the championship and you got a little medal, and in the final analysis, what does it matter whose mantle the cup sits? You know, it's, you know what I mean? So why not play a ball game that where the stakes are much more exciting and much more interesting and much more meaningful, you see? So I always recommend for all the sporting types, and that's many of us, for all those who have a sporting nature, I recommend that you play a higher level soccer game where you can get even more nectar, more excitement, and you don't have to wait once a week for that soccer game. In fact, this soccer game you can play 24/7. You can just play this soccer game constantly. And the stakes are very powerful, they're very potent. In fact, whoever wins this soccer game makes history. They change the history of the world. Now that's a powerful soccer game. Now, I have seen soccer games that did have a big impact on history. There was one island in the Caribbean Sea in the Western Hemisphere, over there by the U.S., you know, down there south of the U.S. This one island that had two nations on it, and soccer is the big sport there. So the island has two countries on it. So they had a little, you know, sometimes they have these soccer game brawls, you know, post-game brawls, you know. Especially Britain is famous for them. But anyway, they had a little post-game brawl. The soccer game turned into a brawl, and the brawl escalated. You know what happened? The two countries went to war. It turned into an actual war between the two countries from the soccer game brawl. So you could say, well, that soccer game had a big impact on the history of those countries, and it did. But I'm talking about a much more potent, much more powerful impact on world history, and that is this game, this ball game. What is the biggest ball we deal with every day? The planet Earth, you see. This is a humongous ball. So there's two teams right now competing to control the ball, the Suras and the Asuras. Right now, the ball is in the control of the Asuras. The demons are controlling this planet right now. Every country, every government right now is controlled by demoniac persons, selfish persons. You see. So if you like to play ball, well, let's join the great Acharyas in the greatest ball game of history. It's called Sankirtan Yajna. Let's join with the great Acharyas, Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktinath Vinod Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta. They're playing ball on the highest level. Let's join their ball game. Join their team. Lord Chaitanya's team, you see. Let's join that team and play that ball game, you see. And when you fully dedicate yourself to revolutionizing this planet, starting with your own heart and then trying to do everything you can to push pure bhakti wherever you go, in all times, all places, and all circumstances, your life turns into the most exciting adventure. You get to live on the cutting edge of world history. Why do I say that? Because it is predicted by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who is actually one of the gopis in Krishna's pastimes, who came down and took the form of a sannyasi to be in Chaitanya Leela. Krishnadas Kaviraj has stated very clearly in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sajjana Durjana Pandu Jadda Anagana Prema Vanyaya Dubaila Jagatara Jana. This Krishna consciousness movement is a Prema Tsunami. It is a tidal wave of Krishna Prema. And it will inundate the entire universe, drowning everyone, whether they are lame, invalid or blind, pious or impious. Everyone will become drowned in this inundation. So, the Chaitanyaites are guaranteed to win. Whoever plays this ball game is guaranteed to go down in history as one of the Sankirtan heroes of Lord Chaitanya's movement. And all, you don't need any great qualification to play. You don't have to be a great speaker or a great pundit or a great cook or a great pujari, a great salesman. You don't need any great qualification. You don't have to be good-looking. You don't have to be rich. There's no material qualification whatsoever. Only one thing is required, and that is sincerity. If you sincerely want to see the Lord Chaitanya movement will inundate this planet with Krishna consciousness, then all you have to do is say, Lord Chaitanya, please engage me. I want to help you to inundate this planet with Krishna consciousness. Please engage me as your servant, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In this way, just beg Lord Chaitanya. Now I want to be on your team in this ultimate ball game, the Sankirtan Yajna. So in this way, you see, you can taste so much bliss, because the more you give happiness, the more you get happiness. So if you want to taste the highest happiness, then you should fully dedicate your life 24/7 to giving the ultimate happiness to every man, woman, and child on the face of this planet. And then you can think about the animals and the plants too. They'll get included too. That if one will take up this mood of wanting to give Krishna consciousness to everyone, you see, then you will taste the highest happiness. That's the thing. So now we'll go to the third characteristic. Actually, now's a good time for a break. We have, this is 9 to 1, so now we'll take a 15-minute break until 11 o'clock, and then we'll have a 2-hour session from 11 until 1. So we thank you all very much for attending this Pure Devotional Service Seminar. We'll meet again in 15 minutes. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.